Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele. I'm not solo this week. I'm joined by Stuart Smith. Hello, Stu. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Thank you, John. Very well. It's good to be back on the recording schedule. It seems like a while, but we've got a lot to go through, right?
Yeah, it's definitely been a while between drinks. I think we've both sort of been on the verge of nervous breakdowns trying to cover all the games, watch all the football the last few weeks. So I think we're going to do something slightly different, aren't we, Stu, this time? So we're going to focus on two or three games in detail from what happened in J2 and J3 over the weekend. And then we're just going to pick out any other talking points as we see fit. Hopefully the goal is to give the listener a sort of more rounded view, and also for us to be able to go to sleep before about 2 a.m. So should we get to it? Is that okay?
Absolutely. Let's deal the cards and let's go.
We can always talk about Hunt for Red October later
if we find October.
Yes. Okay. So J2 then, Stu, round 32 took place over the weekend. By my reckoning, that means there's 10 rounds left. Kind of incredible to think about. And I think for J2 and J3, that means we've reached the league's kind of official completion threshold, haven't we, of playing 75% of matches. So whatever happens from here in terms of COVID-19, these J2 and J3 seasons are going to count. They're going to go into the record book. So that should concentrate our minds and the players' minds going into the last 10 matches. So yeah, J2, round 32 at the weekend. We have Tokushima Vortis, 3 points clear at the top. They won 2-1 at Tokyo Verde on Saturday. This was thanks to a late penalty from Ken Iwao after a handball from Verde's captain Shohei Takahashi. That was just with about 4 minutes left on the clock. Tokushima had gone in front early on through Koki Kiyotake, but Joel Chima Fujita had levelled for Verde. This was all in the first half. There was some drama in stoppage time right at the end of the second half, and Tokushima managed to score an own goal with a header from a Verde free kick. It was disallowed for offside. I couldn't understand the decision on the timeout. I'm a known Verde sympathiser, so I might have been watching with green-tinted spectacles, but it seemed like a very harsh decision. Perhaps we can pick that up in a moment. Stu, in second place, it's still Avispa Fukuoka. They're 2 points clear of third place, but they surprisingly lost 1-0 at home at the weekend to Matsumoto. That's two defeats now in their last three for Fukuoka. It was Taro Sugimoto with the winner, and that's five matches unbeaten for Matsumoto, so they seem to have turned their season around just a little bit. This was a notable game because it was a battle of brothers, wasn't it? Takayuki Mai in the Matsumoto team against his brother Hiroyuki in the Fukuoka midfield. So, Matsumoto winning 1-0 at Fukuoka, a bit of a shock result. Third place Nagasaki are just 2 points behind Fukuoka now. This is after winning 2-1 away at Gunma, thanks to a brace from, and I think you called it right in your written review of the midweek, the J2 cheat code, Edigar Junior. He scored a brace for Nagasaki in this game. That's Nagasaki unbeaten in six games now. Hashtag back stronger, I think. Nagasaki actually went behind early on, didn't they? Stu, Yuki Kawakami's header from Genki Omae's corner put Gunma in front early on, but the visitors were level at the break. Edgar Junior's shot deflecting in after hitting Kawakami. So it was a busy first half for him. Poor old Kawakami, he was involved again in the second goal just before the hour. He was bullied off the ball by Takumi Nagara. Quite an impressive feat considering that the height difference is about 2 feet between those two. And ball was crossed into the penalty area. Edgar Jr. headed in his second. So we've got Tokushima top, Stu, 3 points clear. Fukuoka in second, 3 points behind them, but 2 points clear of third. And yes, it's Nagasaki in third, six games unbeaten. And they've unlocked Edgar Jr. in their FIFA Ultimate Team, haven't they? What do you make of these three games? And anything we should take note of?
Well, I think you've gone through them all pretty succinctly there, John. I think I'll go in reverse order. This Edgar Junior signing, it's potentially season altering for Nagasaki. He's just so good, and I'm still surprised that Nagasaki were able to coax him there. I'm sure there's a big financial incentive for him to go there and to play out the rest of the season on loan there. I'm sure he's been a backed by Japanet and the other sponsors at Nagasaki. But this has the potential to change Nagasaki's season. They were in a bit of a slump. And yeah, just suddenly to bring in someone of his caliber, what's that, his third goal in two appearances or whatever it is. And just, I mean, if he stays fit and if he's regularly selected, he'll score 10 goals by the end of this season. And I don't think that there's any doubt about that. And I think that just having him instead of, and this is not a slight against these players, but having Edgar Jr. up front instead of Keimon Togashi or Keiji Tamada is just a different proposition for defenses to deal with. And it's difficult for defenses to keep on top of him. And so for Nagasaki, you're looking at the rest of the season pretty positively, I would suggest right now. Fukuoka, I mean, we knew this was going to come, right? Not this particular result against Matsumoto, but this kind of, and it's not a slump, but it's two defeats in three games, and
yeah, they weren't gonna be unbeaten for the rest of the season, were they?
Mm. Exactly. That's kind of the argument I was trying to make probably about a month ago, that like, it was unrealistic just to expect Fukuoka to keep up this pace as the season kind of draws to its conclusions. I think that, yeah, we made a lot about the signing of Yuya Yamagishi when he went from Yamagata to Fukuoka, but when you pair that signing against Junior's signing, it's quite clear which team got the better deal. And I think I don't know if Fukuoka knew that Junior was available or anything like that, but I think like they might regret not going kind of full tilt, if that makes sense. It like they could have made another splash signing, and it could have helped them a lot in this kind of final stretch of the season. Matsumoto, you mentioned it there, it's 5 unbeaten, and yeah, they're finally edging back into mid-table, where I think we both thought they would be to when we started the season. It's been a bit of a roller coaster, a ride for them so far. Fukuoka, yeah, I mean, it's like Nagasaki have had a rocky time in the season. Tokushima have had a rocky time in their season, and it's Avispa's turn now. Now, whether they can kind of keep in front of Nagasaki or keep on the coattails of Tokushima, we'll see. I mean, it's notable that Sarantes is back in the sticks, and yeah, maybe he wasn't at fault for Sugimoto's goal, but you know, the changes in the back line, they often kind of take a little while to settle into, and so maybe they just need to get used to each other again. Tokushima, this was I think this was a big game for Tokushima. It's one that ordinarily I would look at and think, yeah, they'll do well to get a win here, and because I think Verdy match up quite well with them, in as much as they can kind of press quite physically. They're not afraid to get into opposition faces and kind of challenge them. I think the Fujita's goal was excellent. I mean, he's a really, really good player, this Verdy midfielder, Joel Fujita. I think you've pointed him out on several occasions before. I think he's got everything that probably you require in the modern day midfielder, certainly at this level. I think it won't be too long before a J1 club steps in and thinks, oh yeah, we'll have a look at him at a higher level. It was definitely a penalty. I don't really see where Takahashi's going with his arguments. I mean, there isn't a lot he could have done, to be quite honest, but the way the rules are now, he stopped the ball going through to a Vortis player with his arm. It's definitely a penalty. And then, yeah, an injury to... I'll throw my hands up here. I'm not exactly sure of the rule here, because it was definitely an own goal. It was, there was no question about it. It's Jin Hanato who was offside, and I think he was based. I think he was offside, but then I'm a Vortis believer, so I'm probably bound to say that. But I don't know if him being offside is enough to chalk off a goal, an own goal. Referees or assistant referees can correct me on that, but I think it was pretty. Yeah, it was a pretty. I don't know if it's harsh, but it was. If it goes against you, it's really harsh. But if it goes for you, it's a completely vindicated decision. And it's those kind of decisions that end up promoting teams, I think. And I think this was a big win for Vortis. And if they can follow it up on Wednesday against Tochigi, I think they're playing Tochigi at home, I think then we might start to see them kind of look towards finishing in the top two at the end of this season.
I think that's all good, solid analysis. I think it's probably right that Jin Hanato was offside in this disallowed goal that we're discussing. But like, you know, I'm never really clear. The concept of interfering with play or not interfering with play is very tricky for fans, I think. It's probably very tricky for officials as well. I mean, I tend to think, you know, if a player's on the pitch, they basically interfering with play, aren't they? That's why they're there. So I'm not a fan of the interfering with play rule. But given that it exists and it's there, then it's hard to understand why it's sometimes applied, you know, selectively, I think. It's kind of the opposite. This is the opposite of the handball rule, which we'll probably talk about later, maybe in some other games. But I don't like the handball rule as it is now, but I accept that if the ball hits somebody's hand, defender's hand, it's a penalty. I don't like the interfering with play rule either, but with the rules as they are, yeah, I had trouble understanding why that goal wasn't out. I think that the telltale thing is always the reaction of the other players. No Tokushima players were asking the referee to disallow it or surrounding the referee. They all had like head in the hands, you know, sank to their haunches. So I think they thought it was an okay goal. And yeah, the DAZN highlights package did not include a replay.
Oh, does it not?
Which is, okay. No, just so that's how you know that's kind of the telltale.
Ah,
sign, really, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I think we chatted a little bit before we started recording, Stu. There's an 8-point gap between this top three of Tokushima, Fukuoka, and Nagasaki, and the rest. I tend to think, with my semi experienced eye, with 10 games to go, that means the top three that we've got now will probably be the top three at the finish. But I think we also know there's not much to be gained other than making ourselves look foolish if we go making predictions about what order this top three will end up in. So let's move on and take a look at the chasing pack. So as I mentioned, 8 points between Nagasaki in third and Niigata now in fourth place. This is because Niigata beat Kitakyushu 1-0 at home. So that moves Kitakyushu down a little bit to sixth. Niigata playing with the blue shorts and socks at the moment. Which I think is quite a good look. I hope they keep that around for next season. Kofu are in fifth. They're level on points with Niigata. This is after winning 2-1 away at Omiya. Kenta Uchida slamming in the winner for Kofu in the fifth minute of second half stoppage time, which he seemed to enjoy a great deal. You can't really blame him for that. Seventh place Kyoto, they lost 1-0 away at the eighth place team, Tochigi, with Takehiro Akimoto scoring the winner in that one. Anything of note from these games, Stu?
There was a headbutt in the Omiya Kofu game from I think it was Yamakoshi Kohei. I think he was that not included in DAZN highlights?
Full disclosure, I got my stuff. So unless the headbutt led to a goal or a penalty, I'm in the dark. Yeah, tell us more.
Oh, well, Dudu fouled Yamakoshi. I think it was Yamakoshi. I should probably just check that. Yes. Yeah, Dudu actually fouled Yamakoshi. It wasn't a very nice foul. It was one of those kind of Dudu dragged Yamakoshi's leg, causing him to fall over. Yamakoshi didn't like it and went in for a headbutt right in front of the referee. Dudu made a lot of it. There's always, I find in J League football, you can always tell when something non-serious has happened, because Dudu was rolling about on the floor. He was literally kind of maybe 10 yards away from the touchline, but the physios never came on. So he's right. He's rolling around, holding his eye. I mean, Yamakoshi did deserve to be sent off because he did push his head into Dudu's head as well, which is...
Oh, the red card came out, did it?
Oh, yes. So Yamakoshi Yamakoshi was sent off for the headbutt. Dudu is given a yellow card for his original foul. But again, okay. it's the retaliation which gets the stronger punishment.
Oh, okay.
And so, so yeah, Omiya kind of did well to hold out for so long. But like you said, right at the end, Kasahara saved a penalty as well, going into the later stages of the game. So
This is all news. This is all news for me. Tell
me. Yes. So Kasahara, Kasahara saved a Jin Izumisawa penalty. So. Ex Omiya fan favorite coming back, and Kasahara saved his penalty. But then when did Uchida score? In the sixth minute?
It was the 95th or 96th minute, yeah.
Yeah, so no wonder he enjoyed it. And Omiya have got so many injuries. It is ridiculous how many injuries that they've got, and they almost held out. But yeah, they just couldn't see.
They could have done without Yamakoshi getting sent off.
Well, yeah, exactly. And Yamakoshi did just lose it. He didn't go all Duncan Ferguson on Dudu, but he did thrust his head into Dudu's face, and it was right in front of the referee. And the referee didn't really have any other choice, kind of what to do.
Yeah, you can't do it, can you?
No, you can't. Dudu looked highly surprised that he was booked, but it was like one of those that his initial foul wasn't very nice. It wasn't very sporting. Well,
when Kofu went in front, Dudu was sort of doing the not shushing gesture, but like he had his fingers in his ears when he was so I assume that was related to the shithousery that we're talking about in general. So did Yamakoshi got sent off at 0-0 then? Is that
No, Yamakoshi was sent off at 1-1.
Okay. So Dudu obviously got some issues maybe earlier on.
Quite possibly. He did look.
You wouldn't think that with Dudu, would you?
Well, he has this kind of he comes across as a really kind of upbeat, lively, friendly individual, but he does have this little streak in him that turns angry all of a sudden. He does have it in him, I suppose. He's been in Japan a while now, so he knows what to do in games, and he's very good at what he does when he actually gets on the ball, and he's highly important for Kofu. But yeah, just his initial foul, when if you see it, it's not very it's not very nice to look at, because it's a clear foul and a clear yellow card. But Yamakoshi,
I'll watch the kind of extended highlights. Yeah, it's a more eventful game than it seemed from the all goal show. Yeah,
and Niigata's goal was clearly offside. I genuinely don't know how that was given. Omoto Yuki was just literally on the goal line. I don't know how it can. I don't know how it can't be offside. And
I think Romero Frank might be offside as well.
I think there could be a number of offsides in that. And I think Shinji Kobayashi got a yellow card. I don't know if that came across in the highlights. He got a yellow card. Giravants Kitakyushu's manager. It's weird because I can't remember the last time I saw a manager get a yellow card. I've seen managers get red cards, but not a yellow card before. So it's like, why?
Yeah, maybe we don't know what the threshold is.
Yeah,
how abusive does the language have to be?
Yeah,
when you're testing to go straight red.
So I think Niigata were pretty lucky to come out of that one with a win, I think. Kyoto will be in J2 next year. I don't think there's any doubts about that. And you wonder about the makeup of the team for next year. It's expensively assembled, one would think, without having access to their finances. But they seem to have a lot of kind of older veteran players who were probably on kind of rather high salaries, I would expect. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how they'll keep things together next year. But another feather in Tochigi's cap. It's another good win for them against a team with a lot more resources than them. But once again, they were highly organized, and this Akimoto kid, he's playing really well up front for Tochigi. He's a local boy. He came through their youth system before going to university, coming back and playing for his hometown team. So it's good to have a local lad kind of spearheading what looks to be probably their best ever season. I would, without having the stats in front of me, I would say I can't remember Tochigi doing this well before.
Well, let's put it this way. It's a lot better than last season.
Most definitely, yeah.
Yeah, Takira Akimoto, he's one to watch, definitely. He's caught my eye every time that I've watched Tochigi or seen the highlights. So, I wonder where he'll be. I've got a feeling next season he'll still be at Tochigi, but, you know, long term, I wonder if he might find himself, you know, snapped up to go somewhere. Somewhere where the lights are a bit brighter, maybe. But let's move on, Stu. Good analysis as per usual. Talking of feathers in caps, there was a big away win for Mito Hollyhock, wasn't there? 4-2 at Kanazawa. I need to talk about Kazumi Yamaguchi's free kick, the opener for Mito, which was just sensational. And I don't have anything against Shunsuke Nakamura or Yasi Tendo, obviously, legends and incredible players. But if they'd scored a free kick that good, it would just be like played endlessly on a loop somewhere, you know, on some TV channel. It was absolutely brilliant. And it was an all-round fantastic attacking display from Mito, winning 4-2. There was also a big away win for Yamagata, who cruised. And cruised, I think, is probably the opposite word, to a 5-1 victory away at absolutely pitiful Jeff United. Vinicius Araujo scored 2 goals for Yamagata here. I note with grim resignation that Jeff also managed to lose 5-1 at home to, who else, Mito, just last month. I make that 9 home defeats this season for Jeff, which would be relegation form. If there were relegation, and they've picked up some good results away, which is keeping them sort of in 17th place. But a bunch of losers and quitters, really. What about these two big goal rush games, Stu?
So Kazumi Yamaguchi is currently the best player in the league in J2. I'm pretty happy dying on this particular hill. His free kick was outstanding. And it was his 13th goal of the season. Mito are the best attack in the league. They've scored, 56 goals so far. And, I mean, their defence is a bit of a train wreck at times. But I think that no one can argue with the job that their manager, Tadahiro Akiba, has done there. And he's basically helping to make Kazuma Yamaguchi into a star, and at the same time he's advertising Mito as somewhere that big clubs, in inverted commas, can send their young starlets to go and get first team football, and more importantly they can develop there and they can become better players for going to Mito. And I think that in the long run, because obviously Yamaguchi won't be there next year, there'll be a raft of players who won't be there next year, like Kota Yamada won't be there, Shunpei Fukuhori probably won't be there, but they are the trailblazers, and they are the players that will go to Mito, go back to their parent clubs as better players, which will in turn make other managers think, okay, yeah, we'll send our young players to Mito, and yeah, they'll get playing time. They'll get a good coach coaching them, and yeah, I think that is more important for what's going on for Mito than anywhere that they finish this year. They're having a fantastic season, but it's the future. Mm-hmm. It's the future that they are. It's the building blocks that they're putting down now that are going to reap rewards for them in the future. Mm-hmm. For Jeff, I'm not going to talk about Jeff, but what I will talk about is Vinicius Araujo. So back at the beginning of September when Yamagishi went to Fukuoka, I remember you saying that, you know,
yeah, I singled him out for criticism before that as being a real disappointment.
Mm.
But
all it takes is him to get a real kind of solid run in the team, and he looks a fantastic player now. He scored 6 goals in the time since Yamagishi left. He missed a penalty yesterday. Is it Monday today? Yeah, it's Monday. Sorry. He missed a penalty that was the rebound was put in by a different player, and he was at the heart of everything that Montelio did well, and he has been at the heart of what Montelio have been doing well for the past month or so. And I think that we thought that he was disappointing, but that's probably because he wasn't being given the chance to really impose his authority or assert some responsibility in the team himself. He looks a really good player now, and yeah, they'll be difficult for teams to get past. And I'm gonna preview something here. I'm looking at the run-ins for all the top three, and I note that all of the top three have to play Yamagata in the final stanza of this mm-hmm. season. So like Yamagata and Kyoto actually are gonna be really, really important in this running. And the way Yamagata are playing at the moment, they're not going to be an easy team to knock off.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. I think we can be fair to Vinicius Araujo and ourselves, can't we? I think it's fair. It was probably fair to say he was disappointing earlier on in the season for the reasons you mentioned. But we also, we can hold our hands up and say, you know, admit when we've been made to look foolish. It happens on a regular basis, but yeah, he's just been excellent. And I think he's probably, he was too similar a player to Yuji Yamagishi for them to work well together in the team. And now that one of them's gone, he's blossomed, hasn't he, in the team. So he's good to watch. Jeff, I think people are looking forward to me sort of going off on one. But I think because Jeff have been terrible all season, it's something we can say for a post-season wrap-up, Stu. Because I think at this point, we'll just be repeating
It'll be nothing new. It'll be nothing that hasn't been said before. They were abysmal. They were absolutely abysmal against, I mean, insert opposition name there, really, right? Because they've been abysmal all year.
Kagoshima away at Niigata, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. But these are highly. I mean, just the last goal with the crossfield pass that gets intercepted, and then people just running free like wherever they want to go. It's just it's embarrassing. And
I think yeah, the one for me is the penalty that you mentioned, which was saved, and then the rebound was put. There's three Yamagata players converging on that rebound in the 6-yard box when Jeff's keeper Shota-Arai managed to save it. There isn't a Jeff player like in the frame, you know, in the TV picture. It's like, well, if you're a fan, you know, losing 5-1 at home twice in the space of months bad enough, but you might want to see one of your players maybe following in a penalty to see if they can clear it, you know, help out the goalkeeper a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I watched Yoon Jung-hwan's post-game interviews, because I'm always interested whether he uses Korean or Japanese. In this one, he used Japanese, and like the reporter asked him, well, what can you do about this game? And he just smiled. He's just like, he said in Japan, in flawless Japanese, actually, because he's really good. Mm. He just said,
so I'm going to set the players on fire.
He just said, we have to rethink our game. I'm just like, yeah, you do. But whatever you're saying isn't penetrating the brains of the players in the team. And no, I mean, Yoon Jung Kwan won't be there next year.
He just won't.
We've spoken about this before. And like, Jeff could sack him and it would be justified. He could walk away and it would be justified. It's the fans that get the short end of the stick. The fans have to sit through all kinds of shitty weather to watch that. And I know I said I wouldn't talk about Jeff, but there we are.
Yeah, let's bottle up all that rage for a postseason pod. Yeah, I think the tone is good. We're pushing time, aren't we? Let's move on to the just rounding off the last couple of J2 games from the weekend. Iwata drew 1-1 at home with Ehime. Okayama beat Machida 1-0. This was with a 93rd minute deflected goal, long range strike from Shuhei Tokumoto. And FC Ryukyu won 1-0 at home as well. This was against Yamaguchi. In my view, it was a handball penalty that was given against the Brazilian, Yamaguchi's Brazilian defender, Sandro. It's harsh for me because he's sliding to block across and the ball, you know, hits his arm. But I know the rules as they are now, it's a penalty. I get that. But still, you know, morally, I thought it was harsh. Koki Kazama scored the spot kick. Ryukyu won 1-0. Let's look ahead. I think we already previewed some of the... There's a full round of midweek games, isn't there, Stu, as is kind of de rigueur at the moment. So round 33 coming up this Wednesday, November the 11th. The games that I picked out are just the games involving the kind of the top three. So Tokushima, I think you mentioned already, they're hosting Tochigi, aren't they? At eighth place, Tochigi. Fukuoka in second, hosting 18th place Ryukyu. Nagasaki, third place Nagasaki, six games unbeaten. Edigard Jr., cheat code, they're hosting Okayama. That's third versus 11th. So you've got the top three all up against teams from, you know, mid-table. Well, it's perhaps harsh to say Tochigi mid-table, but you'd expect three home wins, wouldn't you? Or am I missing something?
I don't know. Like, because ordinarily you would think that there would be three home wins, but For some reason, I don't think Fukuoka's game against Ryukyu is going to be so easy for them. I've just got a hunch. Now, maybe Fukuoka will go out and rip Ryukyu 5-0, but I think Ryukyu will play them quite difficult. I think Tokushima will get past Tochigi, even though it won't be easy. I think Nagasaki have got the bit between their teeth now. I think they'll see off Okayama with no problems at all. But it's the Fukuoka Ryukyu game that interests me. And I think that, I think that might be a potential dropping of points for Fukuoka.
That's a big shout. I think from Fukuoka's game at the weekend, the loss against Matsumoto, the only thing that I noticed that I thought was interesting was that it was the first time in absolutely ages, months, where I thought Fukuoka looked a bit flat and they didn't have many chances. I wouldn't be surprised if there's quite a few changes to the lineup for the Wednesday game. Whether that will help them or not, we'll have to wait and see.
But I think I think we're at this point now where it's interesting that like we're still talking about squad rotation. I kind of feel that Fukuoka are slight victims of their good run, in that the summer was the time to do squad rotation, but they were playing so well that they didn't need to, or they didn't want to, which is completely understandable, because when you rip off 13 wins on the spin, you're not going to change the team, right? But what that does, or what that kind of exasperates, is like right now. So we've got this game on Wednesday. There's another game on next weekend. I think there's another game the following Wednesday. And you're going to have things where like Nagasaki have rested and rotated quite a few players. Tokushima can do that kind of really well. But I wonder if Fukuoka are looking flat because they've been full throttle for the past like 2 or 3 months. And I wonder if that might count against them going forward. That's just...
Maybe they've got too many players in the red zone kind of thing.
Well, it's... Tired. I mean, it wouldn't be surprising, though. That's the thing. Like, the things that these J2 players are putting themselves through, especially teams that have a lot on the line, like Fukuoka, like Nagasaki, like Tokushima, it's just that they're missing... Oh, they missed out on doing some squad rotation in the summer months, and now they might end up paying for it. I mean, I hope they don't, because I hope the promotion race is settled by good things on the pitch. Like, I wouldn't want them to kind of lose out on a promotion spot just because they were absolutely knackered. But I think it's something just to watch in the next kind of two or three games, like how tired they do actually look.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think that top three now of Tokushima, Fukuoka, Nagasaki, I was thinking before we started recording which two, obviously it's two from three, isn't it? I think if we're being honest for promotion right now, and which two kind of deserve it more. And it's really, you can't really pick two. I think they've all been good, haven't they? So it really does come down to this last 10 game stretch, really. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Okay, Stu, I'm going to move you on if that's okay.
Please move me on. Yes.
Yeah, let's talk about J3 before we wrap up the show. So the full round of J2 games is coming up Wednesday night. But let's talk about last weekend's J3 action. Round 26 took place, didn't it? Across Saturday and Sunday. So that, I mean, eight games left in J3 now. They have the 34 game season, don't they? So 8 games to go. None of the top five teams won at the weekend, which was pretty surprising. The biggest losers, though, were Kumamoto, who started the round in second place but ended up losing 4-1 away at Kagoshima. Terrible defending in the first half from Kumamoto, throwing this game away, really. 2-0 down at the break. The first goal was a very rare header from Taku Ushinohama, which I enjoyed. I really like him as a player. Kumamoto did pull one back on the hour through Toshiki Takahashi, but Kagoshima restored the two-goal lead with a penalty. Handball was given against Kohei Kuroki. Again, it was definitely a penalty under the current rules, but never a penalty under sort of common sense rules. He got a yellow card as well, which I thought was absolutely unbelievable. I'm not sure what the referee... What was he supposed to do with his hands, you know, attached to his body?
Yeah, they were literally in front of him. Like, there wasn't... I don't think there was anything else he could do with his hands.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. And then, they added a fourth goal late on, didn't they? Kagoshima, so a memorable win for them and a first win in 5 matches. And Nagano and the champions elect Akita drew 0-0. I build this as the game of the season so far, so I think it's probably my fault that it was goalless in the end. But that leaves Nagano second in the table now. They've gone above Kumamoto. They're level on points, but potentially, crucially, going forward, they're 8 goals better off on goal difference, aren't they? So you've got Nagano second and Kumamoto third. It's Sagamihara in fourth, and they're 1 point behind the Nagano and Kumamoto duo. Sagamihara drew 0-0 away at Fukushima at the weekend. Maybe not such a bad result in it overall, because the pitch, as usual, was absolutely horrible. And Sagamihara's goalkeeper, Victor, of course, well-known and well-liked by Gifu fans, I know, Stu, he was absolutely fantastic. Man-of-the-match performance from him, lots of brilliant saves. There were also some good saves from his opposite number, Kenta Watanabe, as well. So this was a good game for the goalkeepers, I think. And yes, not to be left out, fifth place Gifu also drew 0-0. This was at home with Toyama. You can have your say on this in a second, Stu. That leaves Gifu, yes, fifth, 2 points behind Sagamihara on a run of 3 straight draws, which sounds terrible, but only 3 points off second place, though. So that sounds quite positive. What do you make of that top five, how the top five did over the weekend, Stu?
Well, I mean, aside from Akita, it seems like no one wants to go up, I think. I think Gifu have drawn the last three. I think they've only won once in the last seven. But for them, for Gifu to win once in the last seven and be only 3 points off the promotion spot, it probably says a lot more about the standard of teams in J2 and sorry J2 in J3 this year. I think you're right to flag the Sagamihara point as a good point, because they were under pressure a lot. Fukushima really brought it and they really stuck it to them, but Victor held firm, and that pitch is atrocious. It's borderline dangerous. I mean, it's dangerous in the wet, but it seems even more dangerous in the dry. I don't know what's going on at that pitch. They need to get it sorted pronto. I mean, as for game of the season, I mean, in many ways, it was the game of the season, and it's not a surprise that it was 0-0 between Akita and Nagano, because that's what Akita do. Akita defend their goal with their lives, because you see just all sorts of crazy sliding blocks and people putting their bodies on the line. They could have won, but they'll be more than happy with a point. What are they now, 26 games unbeaten? They host Gifu next week. I obviously do want to jinx them, but in the same breath, without wanting to jinx them, they could be unbeaten, because they are just that much better and that much more organized than any other team in the division. And I think it's something that we should start to take seriously now. Hopefully that's jinxed them for the upcoming game against Gifu. But I think we could be... I think we're looking at one of the best J3 teams to play in J3, to be quite frank. And what goes on behind them is basically a lottery, because I don't see any team taking the ball by the horns. It was Kumamoto, but other teams have sussed out how to play them. If you turn them around and play it long, you'll get behind them, and they can't defend crosses. That much is quite clear. That's always been a problem of Takeshi Oki's side. They can't defend crosses from the flanks. Kumamoto look tired. They haven't rotated their squad as much as the other teams in the league. So I think the double whammy of teams finding them out and them feeling a bit tired is catching up with them. And it's just, I don't know where the impetus is going to come for the second place team. I don't know who's going to grab it.
Akita plus whoever can kind of get their shit together from that.
Whoever puts, what we got, 9 games left? Is it? Sorry, did you say 9 games left?
I think it's 8. Yeah,
is it 8? It's probably 8 games. I think whoever wins 5 games will end up in that second place.
It's wide open, isn't it? It's wide open for sure. Yeah, it's a tricky one for me. For most of the season, I was convinced that Kumamoto were the second best team, but now I think Nagano are the second best team. But then, I don't know. I do think Kumamoto and Nagano are a little bit better than Sagamihara and Gifu. I know that just sounds like I'm just looking at league table, but I do genuinely think there is a couple of points.
I think so. Yeah.
But it's whether they can actually, demonstrate that, or whether that's come through in a sort of kind of mini season over the next kind of month and a half. It's going to be very interesting, I think, Stu. And I wouldn't give up. I wouldn't give up on Gifu just yet. I mean, I think Stranger things have definitely happened. Especially in the J League. But yeah, Akita, we should mention, just they're going to be incredible champions, aren't they? It's kind of funny to see the J3 table mirror the J1 table in terms of Kawasaki, just run. Obviously, in terms of playing style, you'd be hard pressed to find two polar, more opposite teams, would you? And obviously, the resources and the talent involved is completely different. But it's kind of interesting that J2 is the one where there are three teams sort of more or less neck and neck, whereas J1 and J3 have got like a runaway, both two runaway teams playing ridiculous football, to be honest.
It won't be until after the season until we actually kind of appreciate what Akita have done, because they've been since the start, they've been head and shoulders above every other team in the division. And it's not even close. It just isn't close. They are a superior. They're the best defensive side I've ever seen in the J League. They never look like they're going to concede goals. And when they do look like conceding goals, their goalkeeper and their two centre backs in particular are just there in the way. Mm-hmm. You never think Akita are in danger here. I'd be surprised. I'd have to go and check this. I wonder if Akita have ever been, have they been behind this year? But they must have been behind, probably against Hachinohe, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, I think Fujieda gave them a good game as well, but I can't remember. They had a good game away at Fujieda, as I recall. Yeah. I might be wrong, but they've definitely been behind, but not for many minutes.
Yeah, I think maybe Hachinohe went in front against them, I think. Well, or maybe Iwate, one of them. Mm.
They've only conceded, seven goals?
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of them were games that they'd already won. And yeah, they just teams.
Precisely.
Constellation. Yeah.
But I remember... I remember when they stuffed Gifu, and it was they were winning 5-0 in injury time, and Yudai Tanaka made a really good save, and he celebrated like it was a penalty save to save a point. And I think
that's the mentality that you need. I can remember. I don't remember the specifics, but and again, just to continue this, I'm trying to compare Akita to as many world class teams as possible.
Keep going.
I remember. I watched the World Cup semi-final, you know, Germany and Brazil, the 7-1. And I think it was 7-1, wasn't it? Manuel Neuer was furious when he conceded the one.
Mm-hmm.
He was furious, bawling out the defenders. And, like, you'd think any sort of right-minded person would be like, oh, hey-ho, well, we're in the World Cup final anyway, it doesn't matter. But you need that level of... you need that kind of mentality, I think, at that level.
Mm.
I've discussed this with numerous people. It's been like professional... football or professional sportsmen, they're kind of not normal in a way, you know. You have to be a bit sociopath, don't you, about you, the way you play in order to be successful. And I think if you contrast that with you know, not to label them, Jeff in J2, just that they're just happy to be there, can't really be bothered, you know, it's too much effort. And then you see what other teams can produce with literally a little bit of, you know, hard work and a certain mentality. It's very impressive what Akita have done. We probably, like you said, I think again, we need to sort of sit down at the end of the season and have a proper chat about them, I think. But I mean, I've just thought about doing a J3 team of the season, and it might not be worth doing because 8 or 9 of the positions are probably going to be Akita players, you know.
Most definitely, yeah. Mm.
All right, let's move on to the other games from the J3 weekend. Stu, Tottori's Yu Okubo managed to score a hat-trick inside 20 first-half minutes as Tottori beat YSCC 4-1 at home. The Axis Bird Stadium gave my eyes a lot of trouble because there was a smaller pitch painted inside the main pitch markings, if I haven't explained that very well, but that was painted green, or the white lines had been painted green, but it just made them, for my eyes anyway, it made them stand out even more. So this match gave me a headache. But yeah, Tottori winning 4-1 at home to YSCC. Iwate and Hachinohe drew 1-1. Hachinohe's equaliser came in the 94th minute, and it was an absolute stunner. A long-range left-foot drive from Kazuki Sato. Great goal. Elsewhere, Fujieda and Imabari drew 0-0. Gamba Osaka's under-23 side drew 1-1 at home with Sanuki, and Numazu won 2-0 away at Seretse Osaka's under-23 side. Anything to mention from those games, Stu?
Sorry, say that again?
How much did the pitch bother you in the Tottori game?
Well, I think that... I think it was cunningly disguised into their home team colours. I think I quite like that. I can't remember when it was, but there were rumours probably about 20 years ago that Glasgow Rangers in Scotland were going to paint their pitch blue to coincide with the rest of their their club colours and things like that. I reckon it would be quite good to see Sanga playing on a purple pitch or Kashiwa Reysol's pitch yellow and black. I think that would be quite a novel thing. I think there's one American football college team, Boise State. They play on the blue grass. And so maybe that's what they were just succinctly trialing there. There was some pretty good long-range left-footed goals this weekend. I think you mentioned Hachinohe's. I think Gamba Osaka's Tatsuya Yamaguchi's came from outside the area as well. It's something that he's kind of made a habit of doing. It's not the first time he's struck one out from long range, I think. So, but yeah.
Maybe fought the goalkeeper on that Yamaguchi goal.
Oh, yeah. There's no way that goes in 95% of other games, but Kenta Shimizu, for whatever reason, went down in installments, as they like to say.
Oh, I was about to say the same thing. I was going to say the same thing.
See, I got you there. You got to be in it to win it,
yes,
right?
It's not Yamaguchi's fault that the goalkeeper. Probably still diving now. All right. Well, I think we wrapped up the J3. That was a short and sweet J3 wrap-up, I suppose, Stu. So let's look ahead to the J3 weekend coming up. So we should mention it's a three-game week coming up, isn't it? So there's games this weekend, round 27, then next Wednesday, and then another round the following weekend. So that's normal for the J2 teams this year. God help them and us. But for J3, it's not every week's not like this. So we've got a three-game week starting on Friday, November the 13th, spooky. Okay, so we've got Sagamihara against Seretse Osaka's under-23 sides. That's fourth place hosting the bottom side. Big games on Saturday, November the 14th, Akita against Gifu. We've mentioned first against fifth. I don't know what's going to happen there. Nil-nil's my guess, I suppose, where Akita are concerned. We also have on Saturday Kumamoto against Fujieda, third versus tenth. But, you know, Kumamoto really need to sort out their form, don't they? They need to get a win there. It's a big game for them. On Sunday, November the 15th, I think the big game is Sanuki hosting Nagano. So that's second place visiting 15th. What do you think of Gifu's chances, Stu, and which other games are you interested in this weekend?
Yeah, I don't really think much of Gifu's chances in Akita. I think Rawasa might have a problem against Fujieda. I think probably a maverick side like Fujieda is probably the last team you want to play against. They have a couple of wild cards up front, and they have some good physical strikers, and they can get service from wide areas. So I'd be slightly concerned if I was Rosso Kumamoto. I think Sagamihara, if they have any designs on promotion, they will dispatch Seretse's under-23s. And the same goes for Nagano, really. If they really want to keep up the pace, they'll go to Sanuki and they'll beat them. So I think it could be a difficult week for Gifu and Kumamoto, which in turn will leave the door open for Sagamihara and Nagano, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think, on paper, those games, I think you're right to pick out Kumamoto, Fujieda. The other three games look kind of open and shut, you know, home wins for Sagamihara and Akita and away win for Nagano. So you just never know in the J-League. I feel like something's going to go wrong in one of those three games. I feel like some, you know, goalkeeper's going to, you know, get sent off, or some other madness is going to take place. But we'll reconvene next week and see how it went, I guess, Stu. So yeah, thanks for your time. It's good to get together and chat. It feels like a few weeks since we had a good, State of the Union address kind of podcast. So that was really good. Hope the listeners enjoy it too. Is there any other business before we wrap up, do you think, this week?
No, I don't think so. I think we've just got the grind continues, really. Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday. Yeah, it just keeps on coming.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I feel for the players, but for us podcasters, it's not been a picnic. not been a picnic, has it? But I've got a good feeling about next year. I've got a good feeling about next year, Stu. We only have fewer midweek rounds, maybe more sleep and rest. You know, I'm sure we'll be fine. All right, thanks for your time again, Stu. And yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for downloading. Of course, we appreciate that. We value the support. And yes, if you're a patron, you back us with cold hard cash. We appreciate that. We do our best not to let you down on that front. So thanks for that as well. Let us know if you want more kind of specific game chat, I suppose, or more generalized topics. We tried to do a bit of both tonight, I think, Stu. We did some kind of game descriptions and some sort of analysis. So hopefully that's a good mix. But yeah, please let us know what you think. If there's anything you want more or less of, more Hunt for Red October chat. You know, sure. We can do
yes.
that. Gigs we've been to, you know, this kind of thing. We can throw that in as well. So all right, but I think that's all for this week. So yeah, enjoy the football in midweek and at the weekend. And yeah, we'll be back again soon. But yeah, bye for now.